All right, Nashville, let's ride. Welcome into the Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're streaming on the Game Nashville app as well. Just download that app in whichever app store you have, either the Google Play or the Apple App Store. Chase McCabe, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson at the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Ryan, what's up?
Oh, nothing much. How are you?
I'm doing well. What has Maverick gotten into today? Has he broken something yet?
Oh, well, it's funny you bring up Maverick. He is hovering like a jackal here in in the last 5 minutes. He is really fascinated by all these radio equipment cords. So a trip to the sin bin is likely in his future.
Well, he is just this is a field day for him. So we hope Maverick stays out of trouble over the course of the next 60 minutes. Very excited about our guest today. This is right up mine and Marquise's alley because, you know, we're big wrestling fans. Eric Bischoff is going to join us at 9:30. He is the former president of World Championship Wrestling, of course. Ted Turner, Billionaire Ted, owned WCW and, of course, did a lot with WWE after that as well. Why are we having him on? Well, with The Last Dance, Dennis Rodman, of course, it was shown that he joined WCW during the finals. And so we're going to talk to Eric about that and what it was like having him and, during the finals and all of that. So we'll get Eric's perspective on that at the bottom of the hour. But first, Ryan, the latest on the NHL and their return to play scenarios. Now, this is ever changing. I feel like that's a phrase you always have to use when you're talking about baseball or the NBA or the NHL, that it's ever changing because we get new information about Corona, COVID-19 every day. But it would appear that the NHL and the NHLPA are close to some sort of agreement that's going to see them return to play at some point this summer. So a lot of moving parts with this. We have heard, you know, that they would just put everybody in one central location. And then we've heard, okay, they're going to have hub sites. Now the latest is there's basically going to be an east site and a west site, and they'll have 12 teams each at those sites. And Vegas appears to be the front runner for the west. Columbus appears to be the front runner for the east. So what do you make of this latest development that it could just be two hubs?
Well, it makes sense, especially with the different reports from The Athletic over the weekend that they're looking at, you know, a round robin type format when they do return to action, whether it's 20 or 24 teams. So, look, however they slice it, I do think it will be in hub cities and not their own NHL cities, in their own arenas. So that's what I would expect out of that. And, you know, what's interesting is that let's say if it's four hub cities and not two, and you have one from each division, well, the word is that, let's say the Central Division hub city is Minnesota or St. Paul, Minnesota, the Central Division teams would not play there. They would go to the Pacific Division hub so that there's not an advantage for the Central Division team to be playing in their home arena and, you know, living at home while the other teams in that hub are in hotels. So I do find that interesting that, let's say, Vegas is the Pacific Division hub representative and that St. Paul is the Central Division, then the Pacific Division teams play in St. Paul and the Central Division teams play in Vegas. I do find that to be interesting.
Yeah, and I to be honest with you, I like the fact that they're talking about just doing an East hub and a West hub. I'm fine with that. Put 12 teams in each. What I would like to see happen in all of this is they continue to monitor the situation. Let's say they start back July 1. I'm just going to use that as a date, that games are being played on July 1st. So that happens, and they're in these two hubs. What I am hoping by the time they get through the round robin, they're getting all clear from different states, and then once we get into the playoffs, as we know them, so to speak, then you can start to incorporate some of the other arenas. That's what I hope. I don't know if they want to do that, if that's going to happen at all. That's just me thinking out loud. I believe they would pay attention to what the NBA is doing, that if the NBA is bouncing around to different arenas, they might be more comfortable doing that. I don't know. It could be less comfortable doing that because they're sharing arenas with some NBA teams, and that's even more exposure. So who knows? But I would love to see when we get to the Eastern Conference Final, the Western Conference Final, that those home rinks are being used. That could be a pipe dream. I don't know. That's just kind of how I feel about it. But Commissioner Gary Bettman has been speaking about this, and he talked yesterday, and he said that they'd like to complete the regular season.
We'd like to complete this season. We'd like to award the Stanley Cup, the most treasured trophy, most historic trophy in all of sports. And our fans are telling us overwhelmingly that's what they'd like us to do, because people have an emotional investment in this season already. And that's something I believe that we can do. And our players are telling us they'd like to come back and finish the season as well. And if that means we're playing over the summer, we can do that. Not an issue. And if that means we delay the start of next season, and instead of starting as we normally do in October, we start in November or even December, that's all doable. So a lot of our planning and a lot of the issues that we're confronting ultimately are going to be resolved for us by other people, whether it's physicians or whether it's governmental leaders. And that's why we have to be doing a lot of contingency planning so that we can react to whatever they're telling us is appropriate and permissible.
NHL Commissioner Gary Bettman, and I said regular season, I meant season as a whole, to try and get that completed. So you hear that, Ryan, and you, when he says we're prepared to play into the summer, I mean, that just shows you the determination. They want to get this done. And if they have to delay next season, they're willing to do that. That's not really an issue. My whole thing is, I'll use the phrase, I don't want to rob Peter to pay Paul. I know it's important to finish this season. I want them to finish the season, but I don't want them to do it where it really messes up what the future looks like if it's pushed too far into the summer. I think that we're getting close to having to make a decision.
Well, the word is that this week we're going to learn a lot more about where the NHL stands in terms of how they want to return. And perhaps this week we learn when phase two of the NHL's comeback plan can begin. They're currently in phase one. Look, we've heard for the last 3-4 weeks, Chase, that the NHL is willing to take its postseason into September or even October and start next season in November or December, without it affecting the amount of games that they play in the 2020-2021 season. So, you know, it's not necessarily a surprise what they've been saying here in the last few days, which, you know, a potential return with, let's say, round-robin games in sometime in July, and then the playoffs could be theoretically in August and September. You take October off, and then maybe middle of November, you're starting next season. I think that would be, as we currently stand, that would be the most ideal timeline, because once phase two starts, they're going to have to start getting these individuals back from other countries that left America when the NHL season paused. But that's not going to be an easy process. So, you know, we want sports to come back as soon as possible. You say July 1. I would say it's a lot more realistic that it would be August 1 before it's July 1. That
could very well be
that the NHL is making its return, just because there's a lot to sort out and figure out before we get to that point.
Could very well be. There are a lot of factors involved in all of this that I continue to think about. You know, it's not just, oh, get the season finished and start next year. Well, you have to have an off season. I mean, you have to have a draft. You have to have free agency. Now, how much is all of this going to affect how many players are moving around during the off season? I mean, we see, you know, all the time contracts expire and you're not going to re-sign a guy. Well, if you're David Poile, or if let's look at it this way. If you're Mikhail Granlund or Craig Smith, two that are going to have expiring contracts, and, you know, Mikhail Granlund especially is one we've discussed, he could get a long-term deal and get paid, get a raise. Does it change all that? Does it make more sense to re-sign with Nashville on a one-year team-friendly deal? You know, does it make more sense for the team to try and keep those guys and not make too many changes? Those are some questions that I think are going to have to be answered to, you know, once we determine just how long this offseason is going to be.
Well, the Predators' ability to do that is all going to be based on where the salary cap lands. I mean, right. With all the revenue that they're going to lose. And look, if they don't return, all the reports are that they would lose $1 billion. If they return, they're still going to be losing a good chunk of money because they will have lost a lot of regular season games. Now, the more teams that they put in the postseason, the more revenue they can get back from that. But they're not going to get ticket sales out of this. So it's if you're the Predators, I don't know if you're going to have enough cap space, even if it stays flat. I don't know if you're going to have enough cap space to fit Granlund and Smith under even 1 year deals.
Yeah, that's just something that I think will continue to come up. Real quick, Pierre LeBrun, of course, of TSN, he says that progress is being made in all of these talks.
Yeah, and certainly the two sides have been really working together since the beginning of the season being on pause. But of late, the Return to Play Committee, Rod, which has NHLPA leaders on it, it has NHL leaders, of course, and of course, NHL star players like Connor McDavid, John Tavares, Mark Scheifele, James Van Riemsdyk, like they've really been going at it in terms of trying to find a path for what a return of season would look like. And over the weekend, there's been constant dialogue from the Return to Play Committee. I'm told there's been progress as far as what a format might look like. We're talking about 24 teams coming back to play under this format. Not 24 teams in the playoffs, like some people I think seem to be confused, but 24 teams that would come back and play. And then I think there'd be some games and then some play-in series to get to your 16 playoff team. So still not a done deal, but the two sides spoke again on Monday as they try to get a format together here over the next week or two.
As we continue to look at this, this is what I'll say. And he said 24 teams, not necessarily a 24-team playoff. And he's thrown out of playing some games, you know, to get going and not just jumping into the playoffs. I want the best playoff hockey that I can possibly get out of this. And I understand that it's different and it's not going to be the same because, one, you're not going to have the atmosphere. You're not going to have fans. That is a huge part of the Stanley Cup playoffs. But I want the best product that I can possibly get. And so saying, okay, well, it makes no sense to resume and finish the regular season at this point. Okay, I get that. But you need warm-up games. So if you're going to play, then have those games count, whether it's a round robin type tournament deal to get, you know, that count and you have that affects the seeding. That's fine if you just finish the regular season. But the more I think about this, Ryan, the more I want to see them do whatever it takes to get the best playoff hockey possible.
That's what I've been saying for a month.
Yeah.
I said a month ago that no matter how they come back, you cannot jump from a four-month hiatus into playoff games because then the NHL, that would be false advertising saying that this is the Stanley Cup playoffs. You would have injuries. You would have sloppy play. These guys have to at least knock the rust off, even if it's in a four- or five-game round-robin format. So I 100% agree with you.
So there you go. When we come back, though, 24-team playoff, 24 teams, that continues to be thrown out there. What could that look like beyond this season? We'll discuss that when we return here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back to The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McKay, Ryan Porth, Marquise Munson here with you. We had to shift a little bit. Eric Bischoff now joins us on The Rundown. Eric, what's up? Good morning.
Good morning to you guys. I apologize for the time shift here. I've been juggling interviews all over the country, and I got my time zone screwed up, so it's my bad.
It's all good. I would imagine that you've been popular these days with The Last Dance and Dennis Rodman and Nitro being featured, that people might be thinking, huh, let's talk to Eric Bischoff and get his thoughts on Dennis Rodman and what it was like. So let's start with that. How did that whole deal come about to get him in the middle of a championship run with the Bulls? I know 1997, I believe, was his first appearance on Nitro and WCW. So how were you able to secure that deal and get Rodman involved?
Actually, I believe it started out with a conversation between Dennis's manager at the time, a guy by the name of Dwight Manley. You may know of him. Dwight also managed Karl Malone, so imagine that. But Dwight Manley had a conversation with Hulk Hogan. How they got into contact, I'm not sure. Hulk Hogan called me. I was in a meeting in Atlanta at the Marriott Airport Hotel. I remember when I got the call. And Hulk said, hey, look, Dennis wants to come in if you're interested. So I got on the phone with Dwight Manley and subsequently got on the phone with Dennis. And we did a deal within probably about 48 hours.
Wow. So Hulk Hogan was the catalyst behind this and because of his relationship. So what were you expecting? I mean, you knew, I would assume, Dennis Rodman, the player. You'd seen, you know, some of what he was like. It fits wrestling. You know, his personality fits that. So how excited were you to be able to bring him in and work with him and have Hulk work with him?
Well, I'll be really honest with you guys. I'm like a peripheral basketball fan, meaning, you know, once the playoffs settle in and it starts getting serious, I'm a big fan. Until then, I don't want basketball. So I was aware of Dennis, certainly, and knew who he was from an NBA perspective, but I was much more tuned in to who Dennis Rodman was as a pop culture media phenomenon. He was way outside the box. So that I was more excited about the character of Dennis Rodman and the persona necessarily than I was the NBA player.
Eric Bischoff is with us here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Eric, how surprised were you that Dennis actually agreed to do this in the middle of not only the NBA Finals, but the last dance of the NBA Finals for that Bulls dynasty?
Yeah, that was mind-blowing for me, because typically when I had worked with the NFL, you know, I had worked with Steve McMichael and a number of other players. Kevin Green, who was still, you know, Steve McMichael was retired when I was working with him, but Kevin Green was still active I believe he was with the Carolina Panthers when I worked with him. And, of course, the NFL had rules about what the players could do and couldn't do off-season. And here was Dennis Rodman coming in to participate in wrestling in not only mid-season, during the playoffs. So it was a head scratcher to me how he was even allowed to do it, but I was thrilled to death.
Eric Bischoff is with us. So when Dennis Rodman did that, and when you were with WCW, how much did that event alone and the pomp and stance around it, where Rodman is leaving the finals, missing a practice to come do that wrestling event, how much did that, you know, help WCW maybe gain some fringe fans or new fans that, you know, you got more eyes on the product because Rodman did that at that time?
That's a really, really smart question. And, you know, the wrestling media, and I hate to even really call them media because they don't really qualify much as media, but the peripheral coverage of wrestling at the time was very critical. You know, because the, you know, wrestling fans and writers and the people that, like I said, are kind of bottom feeders around the edges, they really hate it when you bring in a celebrity. And one thing that I knew back in 97 was we couldn't possibly afford to buy the amount of mainstream sports talk, radio, morning drive, chatter, and publicity that we would get by bringing in Dennis. If I wanted to buy that on the market for a typical ad sales buy, we wouldn't have been able to afford it. It wouldn't have made any sense. But bringing Dennis in, we paid him a lot of money, of course, but not only did it increase the pay rates for the pay-per-view, which is direct to the bottom line of opportunity, but the additional coverage every morning all over the country, every AM, FM sports talk show was talking about this during that time. And it drove a tremendous amount of new viewers and advertisers. I mean, it wasn't just viewers. It was, you know, how the media looked at us. Not the wrestling media, but the mainstream media. How advertisers looked at us, because now we were doing things that really evolved professional wrestling to a whole different level in terms of pop culture. So the benefits were two or threefold, really. The bottom line, it was new fans, as you pointed out, but it was also the impact we had within the advertising community and sponsorships and that type of thing.
Eric Bischoff, the former president of World Championship Wrestling, also the host of 83 Weeks, his podcast that tells stories with Conrad Thompson about those days in WCW. So you mentioned that Dennis and Carl Malone had the same agent, so that obviously made things a little easier to make that happen. When did the idea come about to have Carl Malone involved with Dennis Rodman in WCW?
Well, obviously it was after, you know, we had worked with Dennis the first time, and it was Diamond Dallas Page, the wrestler. I think he was in Salt Lake City at a game, a jazz game, and somehow he made contact with Carl during the game and kind of threw up his famous, you know, diamond cutter sign, and Carl threw it back up. Somehow they ended up in a conversation. I don't recall. I wasn't there, so I don't know how that happened, but the next day, you know, Paige called me and said, "Hey, I got Carl Malone's phone number. He's interested in coming in." I was like, "Okay, we can make this work too." And that deal was even easier. Carl was such, and I say easier because I dealt directly. I went to Carl's house. I met his wife, left Salt Lake, sat at his kitchen table. We hammered out a deal over a cup of coffee and a couple eggs. Probably took about 20 minutes. And we were off and running. It was very, very easy.
Eric, my producer Marquise, he has one he wants to throw at you.
Yeah, Eric. So yesterday I was watching Game 6 of the 1998 NBA Finals with Jazz and the Bulls, and it was the third quarter where it was getting a little chippy. It's obviously been chippy the whole series between Karl Malone and Dennis Rodman, and Dennis ended up catching a flagrant for tripping Karl Malone. And Bob Costas and Doug Collins and also Isaiah Thomas was on the call. And I noticed, like, Bob Costas really, like, took a shot at WCW. So I wanted to play that audio clip for you and just get your reaction.
Rodman battling like crazy, but can't quite hold on to it. Hornacek, he and Malone, Rodman and Malone, and Rodman just trips Malone up. They got to call a flagrant here. They've got to call a flagrant. It's the third on Rodman. He and Carl Malone, regrettably, are scheduled to wrestle in one of those bogus events next month. Why Malone wants to lower himself to that is anyone's guess. And Rodman apparently wants to start the wrestling now.
Wow.
So is that, like, planned of, like, hey, like, you know, I'm not telling you to go out there and, like, physically wrestle him, but, you know, just kind of sell it a little bit as you guys are on the court.
Yeah, you know, and I'm going to try to keep this short, but, you know, Turner Broadcasting, WCW was owned by Turner Broadcasting. I was a president of WCW, and I had a boss. My boss's name was Harvey Schiller. Harvey Schiller's name also came up in this The Last Dance documentary early on, if you remember Michael Jordan's comments about it, not very complimentary. But nonetheless, Harvey Schiller was my boss because Harvey was the president of Turner Sports. Turner Sports was responsible for managing the relationship with the NBA because Turner Sports and Turner Broadcasting had the NBA television. So I had to be really careful about what I did with Carl and Dennis and how I did it. The conversation that I had with Dennis was, I didn't tell him what I wanted him to do. I think that's probably, I don't have to paraphrase this, I don't remember word for word, but it was something to the effect of, yeah, what a great matchup this is, you and Carl in the finals. Hey, Dennis, over here. Yeah. Wouldn't it be really fun if somehow at some point you two guys got a little physical? Don't disrupt the game. Don't want to affect the game. Gosh, if that were to happen, you know, holy cow, that would be great. And there you go.
Fantastic. Eric, I know you're busy this morning, but we appreciate the time and just the walk down memory lane. It's very good to talk to you, and we'll be listening to 83 Weeks.
All right, man. Thank you guys very, very much.
Thank you.
Eric Bischoff, the former president of World Championship Wrestling, also the 83 Weeks podcast. Very, very informative stuff for if you're a wrestling fan. And this, you know, Ryan, great question by you of – of bringing that up, of bringing new eyeballs on the sport. And that's something that Hulk Hogan and Eric, you know, they were very good at. And Hulk Hogan, of course, crossed into different, you know, into movies, and he was kind of one of the first to do that. So I thought that was really informative stuff by Eric Bischoff. When we come back on the rundown, we will continue the NHL conversation and reset that for you next on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune in this Friday at noon for Game 6 Remastered, chronicling the Predators' historic 2017 Western Conference title win against the Anaheim Ducks. You'll hear Pete Weber's call of the biggest moments of Game 6 and an exclusive insight into the Predators' memorable playoff run from the individuals that lived it. That's Game 6 Remastered this Friday at noon on ESPN 102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app. Chase McKay, Brian Porth, Marquise Munson here with you. Before we get back into the NHL, what a fantastic story that Eric Bischoff is nudging Dennis Rodman a little bit to get physical with Karl Malone during a game to better set up their match that they were going to have at Bash at the Beach in 1998. That is awesome. And that's such an Eric Bischoff thing to do. Of how can I use somebody else's product to help my product? That's awesome.
Well, that was such an infamous tangle in that game between Rodman and Malone. And to hear Bischoff tell that story, that he kind of nudged Rodman saying, hey, not telling you to do this, but hey, wouldn't it be cool if you got physical with Malone? And there they are in one of the most popular games in NBA history, Game 6 of the 98 NBA Finals, going at each other. I thought that story was really, really cool. And what Marquise did of pulling the clip from the game and playing that for Bischoff, I thought that was really well done, Marquise.
Yeah, very good stuff, Marquise. And I know that you were telling me, and I actually haven't listened to this episode. I do listen to 83 Weeks, but there is an episode that I think they did last year of Bash at the Beach 98 discussing a lot of this stuff, because that was Hollywood Hulk Hogan and Dennis Rodman of the NWO facing Diamond Dallas Page and Karl Malone. It wasn't a great match by any means, because Malone and Rodman weren't really doing a whole lot, but Eric Bischoff goes into detail about that. So you can check that out, 83 Weeks. In your podcast.
There was a lot of athletes at that pay-per-view, because that Kevin Green also was in that pay-per-view as well.
Yeah.
And at that time it was like everybody, you know, had to get celebrities in wrestling in order to succeed, because that was the same year WWE had Tyson.
Yep.
And that kind of gave them a mainstream boost. So, you know, up the ante by having two guys that just played in the NBA Finals was ridiculous.
Yeah, and I'll say this too, for writers out there that have been writing about this, Dennis Rodman and wrestling, do your research. Because I've read several that say that it was WWE. It was not WWE. They were two separate companies at the time. WCW was owned by Turner, Ted Turner, of course, and that was where Rodman was. So get your facts right, people.
You tell them, Chase.
Yeah, I know. I just, come on, do some research. So appreciate Eric Bischoff for joining us. If you missed it, you can check it out at thegamenashville.com. So let's reset where we were with the NHL conversation and the possibility of a 24-team playoff or season resumption, that they're going to use 24 teams. The thought process in this, at least with
me, they are considering using 24 teams. That's not anything that's set in stone.
Right. That's the consideration right now, and that's the consistent number. I know we've heard 20, but the consistent number seems to be 24. So that's the consideration at this point. So naturally, through all of this, and we had this conversation with baseball, you know, are there some rules, are there some things that they could use for this situation that could possibly carry over to the future? So what do you think? What would a 2014 playoff look like moving forward?
Well, I think the NHL is going to use, if they return and have a postseason, I think they're going to use that postseason as maybe a little bit of an experiment of what they could possibly do in the future if they were to expand the postseason. And I have never been one that is pro expansion of playoffs, because it reduces the exclusivity when you do that, when it, whether it's the college football playoff, whether it's Major League Baseball, NFL, or NHL. But here's where I think they could consider this, Chase, is even if they resume, they're losing money off the fact that from mid-March to mid-April, they lost those regular season games, and they're not getting any ticket revenue from fans attending games, especially in July if they return at that point. So how they could gain some of that revenue back in future seasons could potentially be an expanded postseason. And if you were to look at 18 or 20 teams in that lens, where you could have the top three division winners essentially get a bye, and the wild card teams seeded 7 through 10 in both the East and the West could have a three-game series after they play 82 games. They could have a best of three that you could theoretically get done in 4 or 5 days, and that determines the postseason or the final two spots in each conference of the postseason. So I would not be surprised to see the NHL look at something like this, especially if it can get them some revenue that they lost through this pandemic.
Yeah, they look at it. You got to make it up somewhere. Chris Johnston of Sportsnet, NHL insider for them, he discussed this even further.
Do you see a scenario where maybe the league thinks about expanding to 24 teams in the playoffs moving forward if all these owners are making money off this?
I do think if they do this that we will see a play-in round added in the future. I'm not sure that it'll be 24 teams. You know, there's probably a way to do this with 20 teams, say, and you basically have 7 versus 10 and 8 versus 9 in small play-ins at the start of each playoffs. But I do think that this is kind of letting the genie out of the bottle, that if they go this way, I mean, obviously this format is designed right now to with what's most, what's most doable at this point in time. I mean, initially the league did want to try to bring all 31 teams back to finish the season, but that's just not going to be possible. But, you know, there have been owners in this league that I know of that have already pushed for expanded playoffs that feel like with the NHL soon to be 32 teams after Seattle joins the fold, that it's time to do it. And let's face it, this is a bottom line business still, and it's a way to make money and create interest. And we see in baseball with the wild card games, the attention they get that sport at the start of the playoffs. I think there's a lot of people in the NHL. What's funny is Gary Bettman hasn't been one of them, but that have wanted to see them add playoff games. And certainly if this gets pulled off this year, and probably maybe even if it doesn't, I would think by next year there's a very good chance we see a different looking playoff format for the league.
Chris Johnston of Sportsnet. My whole thing on this is always going to be the same thing. And this is a different situation. You got to do something different this year. I get that. I completely understand that. But moving forward, whatever you do, just don't water down the product. That's all I ask. Don't water it down. Make it fun and competitive like it has been. I know people don't like the rivalry matchups in the second round, but at least you get good hockey. You get a good matchup with that. I know that no one is ever going to be truly happy about the playoff format, not just in hockey, but any sport. There are always going to be people complaining about it and like, oh, change this or change that, or have less teams or let more teams. You know, baseball, go back to the old way. We don't need the wild card. You're never going to make everybody happy. But my only request is give me the most competitive playoff hockey possible. That continues to be my message. Just don't water it down. And if 24 teams doesn't water it down, which I'm going to be honest, Ryan, I don't really see how it wouldn't, then do it. But 20 feels a little bit better than 24. I don't want to see them put crappy teams in that really have no business being there, aren't going to be competitive, and just get knocked out in 3 games or 4 games or whatever it is.
Are you saying that for the long term or just for a season resumption?
I'm saying that for the long term. Like I said, this year is unique. You got to do what you got to do. And I understand that they want to try and make up as much revenue as they possibly can, which, as you pointed out, they're going to lose money. That is what it is at this point. They're going to lose money. But I think for this year, you have to do something different. Moving forward, though, that's where I'm concerned, and I don't want to see it watered down.
Well, I totally agree with you, and I would love to keep it at 16 as long as possible, because it just it feels right. When the Stanley Cup playoffs begin, you feel like the teams that are in there, they deserve to be in the playoffs, and if you expand it to 20 or 24, you are opening yourself up to bringing up what you said, and that is, you know, does a Montreal, does a Chicago, does a New York Rangers, do those teams deserve to be considered for the Stanley Cup playoffs? And I would say in a normal year, absolutely not. But I do feel like it's somewhat inevitable, to Chris Johnston's point, when Seattle makes it around 32 in the league, that they explore putting more teams in the playoffs. And I think it's simply revenue-based, and I think we understand that maybe a little bit more now than we may have 3 months ago in terms of how these leagues operate or consider things like that.
Yeah, I just and I've thought about this scenario too. On the NBA 2K game, you can run the whole league, and you can change a lot of different things, including the playoff format. And one thing you can do is, instead of having, you know, East West, you can have just seed everybody 1 through 16, and you know, in this case 24. But I've thought about that of, okay, do we get rid of the conferences?
No,
I like the conferences.
No, you have to keep the conferences because of travel.
Yeah, that's a big part of that. But I understand just getting creative behind it all and trying different things. But it's just, like I said, this is the perfect opportunity to try it. You have to do something different right now. So this is a great opportunity for sports like NASCAR running midweek races, which is something they've discussed, but they've never had the courage to do it. Well, now they have to, so they'll see how it works. So this could be the perfect opportunity for the NHL or the NBA to try something different playoff-wise.
Sure. And, you know, if they were to do a 20-team format with wild card best of three series, then there are going to be division winners that don't like it, because you have teams playing playoff hockey while they sit for a week. And I do think the NHL will consider that within any future proposal that they look at with an expanded postseason, where those division winners could have an advantage, is that those teams are playing, they are traveling, and those teams could suffer an injury that hurts their chances of pulling an upset. So I do think there's a little bit of a two-way street there.
He had more. We wanted more. We will discuss that when we come back here on The Rundown, ESPN 102.5 The Game. It's voting time. Help us decide who you think has the best soccer jersey in our uniform drawing contest. The winner will receive a personalized Nashville SC jersey, courtesy of Nashville SC. You can vote at the 102.5 The Game Twitter page or the Game Nashville Facebook page. Cast your vote now. We voted on hockey yesterday. Take care of soccer today and get that customized Nashville SC jersey. That's a great prize.
It is a great prize. And the winner of the hockey jersey contest yesterday was the throwback jersey of 102.5 The Party before 102.5 became The Game.
Oh, I love it. The party's back. That's fantastic. That is awesome that people voted for that one and knew that. I mean, because that was a staple in Nashville for a long time. So very, very cool. Of course, we're happy with what it is today. So
correct.
We like the game a lot. But that's awesome. A little hat tip to Bud Walters and Cromwell for some of their history. So very, very cool. So you can vote on that Twitter and Facebook. So he had more and we wanted more. That, of course, is in reference to Michael Jordan and the Bulls. And we saw the end of The Last Dance on Sunday. And he said, you know, I think we could have all signed one-year deals and run it back and gone for seven and won seven. And you and I got into that debate yesterday. Could they have won the seventh championship? I tend to lean towards no, because I felt like some of the damage had been done. The Spurs were emerging. They ended up winning the title that year, but it was a shortened season. We will never know the answer to that question. But the dynasty ended. Michael Jordan retired. He ended up coming back later with the Wizards, of course, a shell of his former self. But it raised the question with me of how many times do you think about a dynasty that ends or a player that, you know they got something left and they have some championships potentially left in them and they leave too soon. So a couple of examples came to mind. I'll go more individual. I think one for me, and he never won a championship because he was on bad teams, but Barry Sanders is probably the prime example in the NFL of a guy that he had a lot left and he walked away.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not Jordan level because he doesn't have the championship, but an individual player, if he was on a good team like Jordan had, I think he would have been.
Well, and it's not like he walked away from football because of a severe injury. He was pretty durable throughout his NFL career. He had a 1,000 yard rushing season in every season he was in the league, and that was all 10 seasons with the Detroit Lions. And his next to last season in 1997, Barry Sanders had over 2,000 yards rushing. And like you put it, on bad teams. And Barry Sanders was a highlight reel waiting to happen every single time he touched the ball. And when Barry Sanders announced his retirement in 98, I think it took everyone by complete surprise. And that's a great example. And you could bring up MJ two different times. You could bring up him leaving for baseball and leaving after the 98 season. And there were, we ran our quarantine question of the day yesterday of, what would have happened in 98, 99 if that Bulls dynasty was back together for one more year. And someone brought up that if MJ didn't retire the first time, that they could have essentially just gone full on sweep through most of the 90s, mm-hmm. just with how good they were.
That's a good question because we haven't talked about that. We've been talking about the second three-peat and could they have done the four-peat? Could they have won seven? Well, they could have done that before. That's a very good point. If he stays, if he doesn't go and play baseball, who's to say they don't win it again, in either one of those two seasons? He came back towards the end of the 95 season, but, who's to say they don't four-peat then? But he was, the one thing that they did a good job of pointing out in The Last Dance is, and I know he said this a lot, but at that point he was burnt out. So you do wonder, okay, what does it look like if he comes back and he's just not fully invested? When he came back, he was fully invested. I mean, he spent the whole summer doing Space Jam, having pickup games with some of the best players in the world,
yeah.
which I would love to have been a fly on the wall for those. So that's a good one. That's a good idea to bring that up of what could happen. So what other examples do you have?
Well, I mean, when Ricky Williams retired for the first time, that was a moment that was caught by surprise. I mean, Ricky Williams, he retired for different reasons than than Barry Sanders or Michael Jordan did. And he did come back, but he was at the top of his game, and Ricky Williams was starting to become, he was an elite back in the NFL, and at 26 years old, he retires. So, then he makes a comeback with the Dolphins at 28, then, he gets into substance abuse issues, and then he comes back again. But after he retired the first time, he was never the same after that. And the Ricky Williams that we saw at Texas and then in New Orleans and then in Miami specifically, that's the Ricky Williams that looked like he was on his way to a Hall of Fame career, and he just abruptly retired.
Here's another one that this will, as soon as I bring this up, everybody's going to go, oh, here we go. Here comes the debate. But what if LeBron had stayed in Miami with D-Wade, with Bosh? And I know Bosh wasn't the same. They were all older. But what if they had kept that together a little bit longer after losing to the Spurs? Do we think they would have won another one?
Probably. I mean, they lost that series against the Spurs because the Spurs – they were an absolute clinic in that series.
They were.
I mean, you couldn't stop them. They were playing such good basketball. with Kawhi being just otherworldly in that series, that it didn't feel like that the Heat really had a legit chance in that series. But you bring up a fascinating question. You know, they win two of four, two titles in the four seasons that LeBron's in Miami. I have to think that they would, if he would have re-upped for another 4 years instead of going to Cleveland for 4 years, does he win more titles in Miami than he won in Cleveland?
Oh, I think so.
So
I think he does.
If he spends four more seasons with D-Wade and Bosh, how many more does he get?
I think he gets at least two.
Even against the Warriors?
Yeah, oh yeah. I do. I really do. I think that team was better equipped than having the horses like D-Wade and Chris Bosh. And I think that they would have some great battles. But, oh, yeah, I think they win a couple more if they do that. Now, with all that said, and part of this conversation is he did the right thing, because how he left the first time, and it's not that anybody faulted him for leaving. It's just how he went about it. I think that he carried that burden with him, that he knew he needed to make it right, and he did. And for him, being from there, going back, winning a championship for Cleveland, you know, that's what he needed to do. So I respect that. But I bet if you asked him after his career is over, if you had the opportunity to stay in Miami with those guys and try and do it again, you know, would he have done it? Now, he had Kyrie in Cleveland. I know that, you know, he was further along than D-Wade, but at that point in his career. But we'll never know. That's another one of those questions. But that's a good way to end it. That'll do it for today's edition of The Rundown. For Ryan Porth and Marquise Munson, I am Chase McCabe. Stick around. Darren Donick and Chase, that's next on ESPN 102.5 The Game.